So tonight, we are, I'm so excited, y'all. We have Dr. Stephanie Ellis here. Yay! Who is a friend and colleague of Roxy, so you know you love her already. She's going to come talk to us about...
I should have dressed better if you guys had Roxy last time. Dang it.
She is like, ugh, fashionista. So she's here to talk to us without the children. She's going to answer all of your questions. Also want to let you know that on the table, on each of your tables, you can take home this chart if you don't already have it at home. One of the things I love about these charts are they give you an idea, which you may want to modify yourself, but it gives you an idea of where we're headed. What is it that we are building to for our children? So if the idea of sexual integrity for our children is that ultimately they are guarding their potential for intimacy through appropriate boundaries and mutual respect, then this little line shows you at each of the ages things you can be doing, maybe some things you shouldn't be doing, to help your child get from whatever age they are now to around week 936. So you can take this home if you don't have one at home already. If you need more than one copy, holler at me. Also, on your tables, you will find these little pamphlet thingies. You can take these home for the right age group. I made the copies, and so they're all funky, but, you know, that's just to keep you on your toes. There's a preschool version, an elementary version, a middle school version, and a high school version. And again, like y'all heard me say this 1,000 times, my favorite thing about what we do is that Josh is in the room and Larissa is in the room with their teeny tiny people, and there are things to learn and to know about how you start conversations with them that will lead to not awkward, but healthy and wonderful conversations when they're older. Which leads me to our game. Oh, also there are books on your table. Those are not for you to take home, but you can look at other books and you can order them on Amazon before you leave just by pushing that little button. You can order it through the Smile South Main Baptist Foundation link and get the foundation some money. Okay, that commercial is over, but it's really cool to know. All right, so last night, so one of my goals for Dishin is to share all the mistakes I've made and maybe help y'all be better parents than I am, or maybe realize that when you mess up, your kids are going to turn out fine anyway. So last night, we're sitting at the dinner table, and I'm sharing a story about when I was in high school, and my girlfriends and I were riding in a car, and an 18-wheeler pulled up next to us, and I said, Abby and Lauren, I don't know how this happened, but all of the girls in my little car, we looked over next door, or like at this truck next to us, and somehow this man that was driving the truck, like we could see his penis. Like somehow he was showing his penis to all of us from the truck. And Abby said, Mother, I don't know how physically it worked exactly.
Well, thanks for that image, because we're all taking it home with us now.
Yes, but it's gonna get better, because here's my parent win of the evening. Abby says, Mother, I remember the first time you said, because everybody at the table is like, you just said penis at the dinner table. And then Abby says, here it is, y'all. She said, Mom, I remember the very first time I ever heard you say penis. I was in first or second grade, and here's another awesome parent moment. She's like, it must have been a Friday because I came home and you were home before me and you had cooked made cookies for us, and that didn't really happen very often. I was like, Anyway, so I come home and I tell you that I'm reading this Percy Jackson book, and I have this big question about Percy Jackson because Percy Jackson's mom is not married. She's never been married, but she has this boy. She's in first or second grade. She's like, Mom, how does that happen? I, because I'm not the great parents that y'all are, and having these conversations with your small child, I freak out. I'm like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. So what do I do when I freak out? You like overshare, right? So I'm like, honey, boys have a thing. It's called a penis. And she's like, what? And then I panic. I'm like, oh my gosh. And like, roll it back in. I can't do this whole thing right now. Like, what's happening? And so then I don't know exactly. She's like, I don't remember anything you said after that, except for if you want to drive your sister crazy, if you want to terrorize your older sister, just go up to her and say the word penis. Apparently, this is the advice I'm giving my children. So the game for tonight is you all have some paper on your desk, on your table, and a pen. All right, here it is.
Where are we going?
Here it is. You're going to write down all of the not anatomically correct words for this body part.
Steve Rager's
going to win it, y'all. The one who has the most gets to take home a Starbucks gift card. We're not going to share them all out loud, though.
For which
body but you part? Have to be
for
penis.
What?
Okay.
For which?
Just for that
penis.
One.
Penis. That's the penis.
We have to write these down.
Write them down.
I'm going to give you 30 seconds.
Whoever has the most is taking home this gift card. See how I'm warming them up for you?
Yeah.
Like, everything's going to be easy from here.
You're right. I told you you didn't need me.
All right, 10 seconds. Heather, you have points.
I know.
Oh, I didn't even think of any of, like, the little kid names
yes,
for them.
I totally
just went over 15.
All right, 3, 2, 1. Pens down. All right, how many did you come up with?
Oh, I shouldn't play.
No. But just, like, to throw a marker out there for
oh,
them.
Oh, 7. That's a lie. I'm lying in church. I have at least a dozen.
All right. Who wants to throw out their number?
8, 9, 9, 9, 10.
Who 10? Who be 10?
Who said 10?
Oh, exactly. It was you. You said 10, Kristen. Yes. Starbucks gift card.
Well, no. What are they?
Okay, you guys, let me introduce myself. My name's Stephanie Ellis. I'm a psychologist. I work at Renewing Hope. That's how I know Roxy. And I didn't even know that we were advertising here. Well, we are. I didn't know. This is not a challenge. I talk about sex all the time. Because what do you think that people come to therapy and talk about? So not that part, the part where usually 35 people don't talk about it once, and y'all all have a lot of different ages of kids. So what I want to do is I want to tell you the 3 things I realized I could tell all of you, and they could all be true, and then take your questions, right? So this starts, and the title of my presentation today is Sex is Awesome.
Yay!
And if you're not sure that that's true, or the sex that you are not having is awesome, then I want to come and talk to you again. But about that, it deserves its own take, okay? All right, so I know that you sort of know this because at one point you were a child. And when you were like 14, you swore to yourself when you were a parent, you were never, ever, ever, ever going to act the way that your parents acted. And you were going to remember everything that there was to remember about being 14. Because also, it's the most magical time. And are you so glad it's over? And now you are fans, and even if you remember it, you wish it weren't true. So I'm going to start by telling you, our bodies were not made for 2019. The bodies you have and your kids have in 2019 were made. They're still made for like Bible times. Really before Bible times. But I thought I'm going to church, so it's like Bible times. You should look at Mary, she's like 14, and she's pregnant, and the only thing about that that's weird, the only thing, nobody's wondering why she's pregnant, everybody's wondering who made her that way, right? 14. As it turns out, women's bodies are best able to carry healthy babies to term between 17 and 23, so that's what we just don't do that now, right? I don't think that you want your kids to do it. And that makes this harder, right? So the first thing to remember is their bodies are telling them different things than we are telling them, and that is really hard, right? And also, every one of these conversations is going to need to happen earlier than you want it to happen. So it's good to sort of be prepared. So whatever is the one of these that you're in, take that one, and then take the next. Okay. This is something that Dolores already has been talking about, and that I want to, I guess maybe this is probably the most important thing I want to say to you, depending on what you ask. If you ask something brilliant, that might not be true. Please, 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 for the love of everything good, do not have a sex talk with your kids. If you have, I'm sure they're going to be fine.
Poor guy, y'all might have already done that.
Do you have the memory of that talk? It wasn't good. Almost certainly. If you can remember it happening at a discrete period of time, it almost certainly was a bad experience for you. All right? So I want to encourage you, the conversations about sex, they should be a lot, and they should be small, and they should be easy. They should be so easy, because... Well, that's number three. If you do not have this cool, open relationship with your kids where you already talk about hard stuff, if you don't already talk about bullying, and you don't already talk about death, and you don't already talk about values, and you please don't start this with sex. Like, try that other stuff. Like, talk to them about politics and see how it goes. I'm actually not kidding, even a little, because that will also tell you where they are, right? Like, what level to talk to them at. Don't start with sex, right? Because also, if you're going to blow it on politics, right? And then learn from that, and your sex conversations are going to be great. Which brings me to number three, which is the conversations are easy, and they can be easy if you just answer what they ask. If number two is in place, right? If you have an easy, comfortable relationship where you guys talk about anything, right? So I think she was seven at the time, my seven-year-old says, Mom, what does this word mean? I think it's pissed. P-I-S-S-E-D. Pissed. Like she's in the spelling bee. And I'm driving. And I'm like, could you read it in a sentence? Right? But she knows she can ask me. Right? And that it's not going to be a big deal. And now she knows, don't say that around other grown-ups because they'll freak out. Right? What happens and when it gets weird is when we're like, I'm really freaked out right now because I didn't listen to your question. You said a thing and I got scared and I reacted like there was like a bunch of tigers around here and I had to do something about it. But really, if I had listened closely to the question that you asked and I wasn't scared, y'all have done this or you wouldn't have those people, so you probably can answer it. Right? But it gets weird when we get weird. It's not weird to them. They don't think it's weird until we teach them that it's weird by our discomfort. Right? One sort of last piece of this, and this is really, really clear in the literature, and also if you've already done this, I'm sorry. Don't tell them what you did. This is true about sex. This is true about drugs. This is true about driving. It's true about dating. It's true about everything there is. Don't tell them what you did unless you want them to repeat it. If you did exactly what you would like them to do, please tell them. And tell them how awesome it was. But adolescents,
especially, their brains are developing in these sort of weird, not congruent ways, right? So the adult part of their brain is not finished making, but sort of the emotional part of their brain is finished making, and it allows them to do things like act in ways that are incongruent with their values and not have any discomfort about it. One of the things that happens is when you say, oh, when I was your age and I used the cocaine, it was a really bad experience. They stopped listening, right? They did not hear the part about whatever your negative consequences were. They only heard the part about how you did it, so I can do it, right? And that's true about sex, too, so don't. If there's sort of like just one rule about it, that's the rule. Okay.
So what if they ask? Should you lie?
So I'll tell you what therapists do when you guys ask us something about our lives. Like, oh, what would you do in this situation? Or, oh, do you have children? Or whatever. Because the thing is, when you ask us that, you don't really want to know. That's not actually what's meaningful to you. You're asking something else, right? When you ask me, do you have kids of your own? What you're really asking is probably something along the lines of, can I trust you? Can you help me? Right? It's not, it really isn't about that. And it really is a bad idea for you to do with your kids whatever it is that I do with my kids, because we are different people and our kids are different people. So it's not a good metric. So if they ask, I would see, why are they asking? Right? Because they might be asking to see if they can get permission from finding out what you did. They might be asking because they're usually, when it comes to sex, they're usually asking because it's something that they want to know more about because they're thinking about doing. So then you can just engage them where they are instead of where you were, right? I know you had a boyfriend when you were in high school. Did you have sex with your boyfriend? They're not asking that if they're not thinking about having sex with their boyfriend, right? Or at least engage in a conversation about their best friend and their best friend's thinking about having sex with, well, hopefully the best friend's boyfriend and not their boyfriend. Right? So I would say that's the thing to do. Say, hey, what's up? What's going on? What brought this up today? Right? Because it got brought up today and not yesterday and not next week for a reason.
So what if you already told them that you did stuff?
Uh-oh. Because I have my card. What do you do when you've done anything like that, right? If your kids ever caught you speeding or whatever, right? But now do the best you can with it, right? Re-engage. If they've never brought it up again, bring it up again. Say, you know what? I was thinking about that day when we talked about this stuff, and I realized we haven't talked about it since then. What's going on with you there? Like, you know? If you want to, depending how old they are. So, geez, I just need to. Can we just start every sentence as if I said, depending on how old they are, comma?
Yeah.
Depending how old they are, you also could consider, telling them you wish you hadn't. I mean, hadn't done it, but hadn't told them, right? If you do, right? And that might depend on how that conversation has gone. It might depend on after you find out, well, yeah, because I have been absolutely sleeping with my boyfriend now for 4 years since we talked. You're in a different territory now. That's okay. How often do you apologize to your kids, right? Or like, tell them that you wish that you had done something different? I mean, I hope you do that a bunch, right? Like, how are they going to learn to apologize if they don't learn to apologize from you? You know? So that's good, too. But open-ended first. Hey, I was just thinking about when we were talking about all that stuff. Hey, I went to church last night,
It wasn't about sex, but then he's 18, but
mean, I was taught, I mean, I thought that telling him a little about my past and the reasons why we do the things we do was important. But you said, don't tell him about drugs and drinking.
So, listen.
Also go back to the fact that you said everyone's different.
Yeah. And the message, that message might not be lost, right? It just probably didn't get heard right then, okay. Right? So while what the research says is that stuff does, this is what I mean when I say they can know things and they can act in a way that's inconsistent with their knowing and it doesn't stress them out, right? It doesn't mean that what you said and what he got from that wasn't valuable. Mm-hmm. It just means that in most circumstances, that wasn't the piece that was going to determine what his behavior was. Okay. That doesn't mean it's not valuable, okay. Right?
This is the Q&A.
Oh, no. I have a little question. It's a little thing, but it gets to like a deeper question of like how to talk with kindergartners about kissing a girl on the lips at the kitchen, at the cafeteria lunch table. So we got an email. I was away and his teacher sent us an email saying that she found out from the lunch lady that Jude had kissed this. He has this girlfriend that he's had since September. Like if you asked him any time between then and now about it.
That's
like,
a really big proportion of his life.
Yeah, it's huge. And I'm like, until I was in college, or maybe Lauren, I didn't have someone that was like my girlfriend for that long.
Well, if you're five and you've had a girlfriend for half a year.
I'm good. But so it's kindergarten serious, you know? And so it's the sort of person that like you might share a kindergarten lip kiss with. And so I was away and I talked to him on the phone and I said, hey, I heard about this thing that happened today. And I thought it was non-consensual. Like I thought he kissed her and she was like, oh, what was me or something. And then when I talked to him, he said, yeah, we decided that we wanted to kiss and so we kissed. And I was like, well, that sounds consensual. It sounds mostly safe. It sounds like he was aware of her boundaries and they made a joint thing. So I
in many ways, it's better than it could have been.
I was like, I don't know what the rules are in your kindergarten class, but just ask your teacher what's possible.
I didn't go first then.
Well, we'll work on the entry. No, so I didn't have a reason that he shouldn't have given her a kiss. And the kindergarten teacher maybe had an arbitrary one. But I have a feeling like that's not going to be the last time we have a conversation about physical entanglements in kinder or first grade or second. What we say in fifth grade is probably different. But so for like, anyway, it's kind of a funny incident, but I don't... outside of just like respecting people's boundaries, is there anything else that we need to be talking about there, you think?
Well, so maybe a couple things. Can I say something about the consent thing? Because I'm actually glad that you brought it up. We're laughing, and it's obviously only funny because they're five, uh-huh. Right? And actually only funny because it was consensual. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, it really wouldn't be. So there's... And again, you should choose the language really that works for you. But a good sort of model, really at any age, but certainly when kids are young, is everybody gets to choose how they get touched. Right? And so if I want to give you a hug and you want to get a hug, great. One of the things that we do is do a really good job of that with our words and a really bad job of it with our actions, right? And we do sometimes this thing where there are two ways that we, with really good intentions, tend to mess this up and inside our family systems. And one is to encourage our kids to hug or kiss family members that they're not interested in hugging or kissing. And we just sort of make it like a thing they're supposed to do. right? Like, as if hugging or kissing is ever a thing you are supposed to do, right? So that's one thing. And we do it from the time that they're so young that they don't even usually know how to say that they don't want to do that, even if they don't. And the other thing that we do is, how do I say this in a...
Just spit it out.
So we make them, like, tiny affection whores. Is the thing I didn't want to say. You're recording it! You should have let me wait. I could have waited, that was my choice.
No, it's fine. I posterity, we're okay.
What is, but what I mean is, we ask them to pay for things. Like pay for hugs and kisses, right? So we're just like, I'll take it to the trash. I'll take that to the trash for you. Can I have a kiss? And it's so sweet, and we love them so much, and we want to be affectionate with them, and that is awesome because also teaching them healthy affection is really good. We just sort of accidentally teach them that they can pay people for other kinds of things with affectionate behavior. So even in our own families, even in our own nuclear families, it's cool to have this idea. Everybody gets to choose how they get touched, right? And you know, there are sometimes you don't want to be hugged, right? If there aren't, you might not be getting enough hugs. But usually there are, right? And your kids too, even when they're little. So there, consent. That was the thing. And...
I hope you heard that. It was a baby's sneeze.
As to whether kissing or whatever is appropriate when you're 5 or not 5, does one have to do, honestly, with the classroom, right? So in the same way that we want to teach our kids that things like sex or masturbation, ooh, we might have to talk about that, huh? Should happen, like, not in the living room when people are there. Right? So probably class time is not an appropriate place for kissing, no matter what age you are, right? Like, I don't know, is the lunch line, like, is that the kind of place that where kissing is? I mean, it is, because it did happen there, right? But is that where we want to do it? So the kinds of behaviors that we want to engage in, does the other person want to engage in them? That's good. Is this an appropriate time and place? That's good. Things to think about. And then we have this sort of relational component. Now, you are already in a statistically improbable situation if you have a 5-year-old who's been in a 6-month-long relationship, right? Yeah. So it might end up being different for you. In general,
they don't go to movies together. They don't really do a lot of particular things.
In general, that kind of thing isn't going to develop into more things, right? Kids are interested in kissing. Kids are interested in a lot of things because things and other people and lips and genitals and all that kind of stuff's very interesting stuff. Of course, you're interested in it. If you're not interested in it, actually, that is more unusual than being interested in it. So, for now, I think cool.
Okay.
See what happens.
That's all very helpful. Thanks.
Are you related to John Spodey?
No.
You remind me so much of him.
No. Thanks. Yeah, he's a cool guy.
If you don't ask me another question, I am just spontaneously going to start talking about the M-word. So.
Okay, so I have a 5-year-old question, and she is really obsessed with pregnancy because a lot of her friends have parents who are mothers who are expecting. And so she's, and she wants a sibling, which is not going to happen. So we're always having conversations about so-and-so who's pregnant and how the baby get there. And so my pet answer is God gave them that baby, and God placed the baby there. And that's just always what I say, and she takes it, and that's it. But I'm looking at this book you put, I mean, should I be happy at 5? Well, whoever put this book.
I don't, So I'm not saying I don't like those books. Okay, I'm saying those are not.
It says age four and up, and there's a section on love making, and it's like the penis goes into the vagina and blah blah. And I'm like, okay, so I'm not ready to have this conversation with a 5-year-old. But can I just? It's just saying stuff. Like, when do you start having more elaborate explanations? And is my explanation that God, which is true, God did place the baby, is that sufficient for her age level, or should I be giving more?
So that is this is a guideline, but that is sufficient to her age level if she is satisfied with it.
Oh, she's very satisfied.
Because remember, if you, and it sounds like you do have this, right? If she's already asking you, if you have the kind of relationship where they are asking you things, they will ask you. And when you say something that sounds sketchy to them, they will say, huh?
See, yeah. And like mine asked, where do babies come from? And I give them really short answers. I'm like, it comes out of the woman's vagina, and then it stops. And I get you, it stops in the car. I get no more questions. It's like, okay, so I stop, and that's what I do, because I'm not going to go through this whole diatribe when they're just
We're adults and we have these brains and they're finished and they do things like abstract reasoning. So when we say something like, from whence do babies come, we mean something different. Kids usually mean, especially when they're under 11-ish in America, what they usually mean is what they said. How does it get out? Comes out the vagina.
Yeah.
That's what they wanted to know. And you answered it. And if they asked you anything else that was not about vaginas, that's exactly how you would answer whatever else it was, right? I don't know. What are the wings on this juice box for? For you to carry it and not squeeze it and make juice everywhere. Like, what? That's what they're for. That's what they're for, y'all. That's why you can pop those things up. Right? So this is what I mean when I say answer the question they're asking and listen unafraid to the question that they're asking.
So what if you do get into some more elaborate explanations? We have a 7-year-old, and then he goes to school and wants to educate his friends. I mean, is that okay?
Have you heard from a parent?
His friend's parents aren't ready for them to know that. What, I mean, is that okay for...
Well, okay, so I'm going to answer that, but before I do it, I'm going to sort of put a question to you that is just meant to be thought-provoking and don't mean anything by it, necessarily. You teach your kid about Jesus. What if your kid goes and talks to Jesus about other friends at school and they weren't ready or their parents didn't like it? So, that's something. On the other hand, certainly at the point where you're hearing from other parents, you know, it might be, you might evaluate if maybe your kid is just more mature or something than what their peer group is. And if that's true, you probably need to have other conversations about them. They're probably reading things that other kids aren't reading or playing games and stuff that other kids aren't. And you might need to have a talk with them about, hey, you know, either you're kind of the oldest kid in your class. And not all the other kids are learning about this stuff yet. So I know it's really exciting to talk about new things. I want to talk about anything you want to talk about, right? If you've heard from a parent, right, you can say, like, hey, Steven's mom texted me, and she and Steven are not talking about vaginas yet. So let's cool it, right? We can talk about vaginas, but Steven's mom doesn't like that. And if they are, and this happens too, so for girls, that sort of early developmental period is really wide in terms of when girls like start developing. Early developers might be 7 or 8 when you're starting to have conversations about like wearing bras and wearing deodorant and things like that. And some girls might not be, they might be 13. Right, so it's a really big discrepancy. Anytime that happens, for boys, the timeline's a little tighter and also later. But you might have to talk about being mature, more mature than other kids in other ways, not just these things that they know about sex. And then some of this is going to almost certainly be influenced by what your experience was. If when you were little, you had terrible experiences because all your friends knew a lot of interesting stuff you didn't know, you're going to err on the side of telling your kids stuff a little too early. So just be mindful of that, right? And vice versa, if you feel like you got this really weird experience and like you were holding all of this strange information and you didn't know what to do with it and you were all scared of the stuff that was going to happen, but it wasn't happening. Why wasn't it happening? And I don't, what do you mean? Then your sort of like developmental trauma was that you heard it too early and you're going to have a tendency then to like lag behind it. And just be aware of that too.
Roger has a question.
Steve brought up masturbation, so I'm just gonna.
Right. Okay.
How do you start that conversation with like? Children in elementary school who obviously don't know what they're doing, but wanting to do that, and like, you know, it's something that they should feel good about doing in their own space, but like not so much in public.
I love how many words and pauses you have for talking about it. I can feel it's going to be a really easy conversation.
I know. I don't know how to. How do you let them know that nothing they're doing is bad, but like we've talked about, like you just, you know, your parts are your parts. Like no one should touch them except you, and who you give permission, you know, like that's mm-hmm. your body. But I feel like I'm getting to the point where they might be figuring out there's pleasure associated with it, and so I don't know how to address like not in front of other people. Like, I don't know. Do you even address it, or should I just ignore it at this point and wait till they're older?
So can I, when you say ignore it, certainly not if it's happening in front of other people.
No, more like at home, but not
if you listen, if you're assuming that it's happening and no one's talking about it, okay. As long as, like, when your kids have strange bowel movements, they tell you. Mm-hmm. This is what I mean. Like, if you have a relationship where whenever your kids have a question about something or they're not sure what's going on, if you know that they'll talk to you about it, you could pretty safely just let them masturbate. Unless you have something about that. I can talk to you about how to talk to them about that if you don't want them doing it, but it's fine for them to do it from a psychosocial and physical development kind of way.
It's more like I don't want to tell them it has to be done. Like, I didn't want to say, it has to be done in your room. Like, because, you know, people walk through our house. Like, I don't, you know, like, I feel like
So also usually.
Have it be private, but not also.
Also, usually assuming that relationship exists.
Right.
So then if there's an issue, they'll tell you about it. Or ask you about it. And also, assuming they haven't gotten to the age yet where they're really, really concerned about you not seeing them undressed at all.
Right.
So that's kind of like a little turning marker sort of thing. If they're younger than that, also, you noticing that's happening, like walking by with the door open, or if they do start doing that in the living room or something, it won't be a big deal if you don't freak out.
Right.
If you just say, "Oh, hey, that is like a bedroom or a bathroom activity. Do you want me to pause the show?"
Like,
then actually, don't say it sassy like that. I just said it sassy to you, right? Right. And
that would be good.
And if they're like, "What?" They're like, "I mean, well, like you don't brush your hair in the living room, right?" This is the way that you take care of your body, so, you know, do it in the places where you take care of your body, like the bathroom or the bedroom.
Okay.
If they have crossed that threshold where they don't want you to see them undressed at all, they are not going to talk to you about it, and you are both in for something very awkward. But also, it means they have probably already figured it out and they're not doing it in the living room, right? And then it will only, then it's only something that needs to be addressed if, like, it's only a problem if it's a problem. And just like everything else in your life, right? It's a problem when it's a problem. If you, if they can't get through the school day without masturbating, it's a problem, right? If they can't, it, like, if they have to masturbate in public, it's a problem. If they, only if it's a problem. Right? Otherwise, and just because they're doing it sort of more or less than you do, or more and less than you used to, or more or less than you think that they should be, it's only a problem if it's a problem. What is that? What is happening? What is that face?
I don't see how that becomes a problem. Like,
and I was saying that it clearly does, and I cited
It clearly does.
The case of Louis C.K. as an example.
I just, where do you draw the line though of like, I don't know. I feel like that's not okay. I feel like it's not okay.
What's
not okay?
What?
To masturbate. I don't feel like that's okay to do.
All right, can I?
And I don't think they're bad. Like, I don't think they should be punished or beaten or anything because of it. I just.
For the record.
I don't, yes, exactly.
Do I have, so that's a thing that a lot of people have a belief about. How many people are you, do you feel comfortable saying that? If there are a lot of you, we can talk about it. If not, we'll just talk about it separately or something if you want to.
It doesn't bother me. We can talk about
it. It makes me uncomfortable, like, when we're reading a book and I have a child who's excited about themselves a little bit. But,
I agree.
And that's a little awkward because we, like, do book times in bed, and you're like, I mean, this is the right place, but there are people around, so, I mean, that may, if you, like, had a show of hands, I would throw my elbow up because I'm not okay with that. But on, like, a moral level, what do I care?
Well, so saying, when you say it's something that you should do by yourself, that's exactly the same as saying, like, these are the rooms you should do it in. Right? It's just a setting kind of issue, right? And so whatever you guys call that, if you call it masturbation at your house, if you have a name for it, or if you have some other name for it, right? Or please identify it as something other than what you're doing right now, right? It almost doesn't matter. Call it whatever you want to, right? As long as you just say it calmly and confidently. Call it anything. You call it green shirting. How that's a thing? I don't know.
Polishing the wax bottle.
Okay. But then you just say, oh, hey, masturbating is something that you do just when you're by yourself. So let's finish the story, the two of us together, right? And then I'll go.
Then there's the bigger question, the bigger conversation we were going to have. Well, we were going to show our hands, right, for who was comfortable.
So, I know you said that you don't... What's your name?
Heidi.
Hi. I know you said that you didn't mind, but if we're going to address it, I'm going to ask you some stuff.
Yeah.
Okay? Great. So tell me a little bit more about thinking I shouldn't do it, or my kids shouldn't do it, or people shouldn't do it.
I grew up, I guess, being taught that it was not something to do. It was not, you just don't do it. And there was never any shame or anything. It was just, you know, I don't know, we didn't really talk about it.
Did you ever hear a reason?
In old Baptist life that I was raised in, it was like having sex and you were basically, you know, weren't supposed to have sex, and so you were having sex with yourself.
Yeah, it was like kind of insinuating.
You were spoiling the deal, which probably came from the Catholic, you know.
Well, I'm from the sin of Onan. I mean, in kind of conservative talk, Onan was like the brother-in-law of what's her name of a woman
who spilled his hair.
Who was supposed to help her have a child so she would have a successor to help take care of her. And he he partially enjoyed the deed, and then he Catholiced out of there. And
coitus interruptus.
Yeah, right. And so he spilled his seed, and so it was like a deeply selfish thing, because he got to the point and then refused to give her a successor, and that, I think, is what the sin is. But it's often translated or interpreted right. like...
And that's how we were told it was a sin.
And then on a deeper
and
way,
not
like,
that way. And just that was they didn't say it was a sin. They just said it was in the Bible.
Oh no, mine
was
saying it was a sin.
No,
my youth director gave me another book that was like, oh no, it's all natural and okay. And I'm like, I'm going with this.
No, I was never
told. My parents found the book and they were like, we're not okay with this.
I was never told it was a sin. I was told it was something that in the Bible that you don't do. That's what.
But there's also the insinuation that it's like.
But I personally don't, and that's not the reason why. I just don't.
So, this is just about talking to your kids, so we can have another day about you guys' sexual habits if you want to. I would encourage you in this way, and not just about masturbation, literally about everything you tell your kid, right? Have a reason. Like, don't say, because I said so. Even if you have to wait and think about it for a bit, and even if you have to be like, oh, I don't know. Have two cookies, like right? But just in general, it's a really, really, really good, healthy parenting strategy to be able to tell your kids the reason why a rule exists or why a boundary exists, or they can or can't do so, or why you've done something, or to be able to. Well, I think this is really a major extension of this, but. Always be prepared to give a reason for the hope that is in you. Like, people want to know the reason, right? And kids do too. So if you can sort it out, and if sort of like it's the tradition of our family, if that feels like a good reason and you're ready to give it, give it. Yeah. But it will always, with that and everything else, go over better if you're able to say, whether they agree with you or not, right? They at least don't write you off. Yeah, for not having a reason.
There's maybe time for one more question. If you have one more thing to throw
out. I don't know how many of you guys have littles. I want to say there's one thing on here that I have something to add to. It is really, really good to teach your kids sort of what the proper names for all their body parts are. That is a really, really good thing to do. I want to encourage you also, you don't do that with any other body part of your kids. You never, when your kid is really little and they're like, oh, and you go, oh, is your small intestine upset? Like, you never do that, right? They're like, oh, my throat hurts. And you're like, do you mean your trachea or your esophagus? You never do that. Right? When they're little, you have little kid names for all their body parts. And then as they become curious about them, you give them the doctor's names for them. Right? Oh, well, that's that thing that you swallow with, that's your esophagus. Right? And then, so, and I'm saying that because, and this is really, really unfortunate, and this sort of is about your own sex lives. I hope that you have a vocabulary about sex and your bodies and your partner's bodies that makes it really easy to talk about sex as it is to talk about dinner, right? Because in our culture, we do not have that. We have words for sex and sexual body parts that are nursery words, right? Like pee-pee, yeah? And, or doctor words, right? Like, no, baby, that's not your vagina. Your vagina's on the inside, and that is your vulva, right? And then we have gutter words, which I think are on this list somewhere, right? But we don't really have these just, like, awesome, healthy, easy words. And maybe we don't need them because maybe we don't need to talk about sex really casually, although we don't really have an option. Right? The internet does not have an option. It has baby talk and doctor talk and gutter talk. That's all. Right? So I hope that you, for your own relationships and your relationships with your kids, can find a way to talk about bodies that's not over-medicalized. right? So even if you choose to use those right terms, or like medically correct terms, make that a thing that you do with all of their body so that they don't start being like, this is like has a fancy name.
So you brought up the internet. Can you talk a little bit, like there's all the stats about how early kids get exposed to porn and really just unhealthy images and like ways to detect that and how to deal with it if it happens and what to, like what's the right dialogue to continue on that?
Oh, I really hate to sound like a broken record, but I will say the more open that relationship is, the more likely you're to find out about it in a way that the conversation goes well, right? Because usually it will happen by accident first, right? By accident, I mean they'll have exposure that they didn't go seek out, that'll accidentally pop up at school, right? Because their blockers got unblocked or something, or they'll be at a friend's house and they'll see it or something like that. And so assuming that relationship is open and this is something novel, then they want to tell you about things that are novel and they'll be like, Dad, dude, when I was over at his house, like, this was what was on. And okay, so that's great if the conversation starts that way. Fine, you have to be more careful. Well, so that one kind of takes you off guard, right? To be more careful if it's something that you have stumbled upon, right? Like you have found in their room or you have found on their phone or things like that, and now you want to confront them because the beginning of that conversation is really important, right? Because if it starts like, son, I was looking through your phone the other day and I saw, they already know they're in trouble and they don't want to hear you and you will not have a positive impact on their functioning as a result of that conversation, right? So there's something on one of these papers that says something like, go ahead and pre-prepare some kind of response you want to have when you get caught off guard. So that you don't respond out of fear or out of anger or out of disgust or something like that. Because when the conversations go that way, you can be sure that you are not having any meaningful influence. And what I mean by that is when we, I'm going to use this psychology term in a way that's going to be confusing to you, but punish. To punish means anything that you do that makes a behavior less likely to happen. So it could be, you could think about this in terms of like spanking or yelling, but like that sort of voice of shame and disappointment thing too, that happens a lot. Punishment does not change behavior. It suppresses behavior in the presence of the punisher only.
So what changes behavior?
The identification of incompatible behaviors and reinforcement of other wanted behaviors. Okay. I know that was like really...
in layman's terms.
sorry, it comes out like that first. So, for example, if your kid is... And then this is not sex related, but like, so you're in the store and your kid is like standing in the buggy and they're pulling off the cereal boxes. Okay, well, what's literally incompatible with that? Sitting. So when they're sitting, reinforcing that behavior, right? Or making it easy for them to sit, right? So like, kid, they don't want to go to the grocery store. They're not interested. Okay? So don't take them. Or bring a coloring book, right? So you say finding incompatible behaviors and making it easy for them to do behaviors other than the behavior that they're doing, right? So for example, it's much, much easier to look at porn when after you come home from school, there's no one at home who really wants to talk to you. And the only thing you really do is like scribble down your homework so your parents know you did it and shove it on the table and then go up to your room and spend the next 5 hours in there. Like, yeah, what else are you going to do but look at porn, honestly, right? Okay, so if we can create an environment where that's not the best option there is, right? Good. We're probably going to do a lot to change that behavior in addition to a lot of other good things like improving the relationship with the family and the culture in the household and all of those kinds of things, if we can make not being up in your room where you have all of this privacy and boredom, if we can give you a better alternative to that. Right? If you need to have a talk about porn, and you may or may not think that you need to, based on sort of what you found or how often it seems like it's happening and that kind of thing. Prepare yourself before you do it, right? So that you are coming in with, I know this is going to kill you, curiosity. If you can approach your kids all the time, if you can approach them with curiosity, it is hands down the best setting for having an impact on them. Then they want to talk to you. You are genuinely interested in their experience. You don't have to be interested in their porn, right? But you could be interested in, hey, like, where did that come from? Not like, where did that come from, right? What brought it up, or how? If you're curious, they're a lot more likely to talk. And again, just sort of like you can set whatever boundaries you want, but if they experience them as punitive, they're just going to hide the porn from you better.
Thank you.